I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Tony Blair brings his campaign for African aid to the White House today. The British Prime Minister has been calling for a dramatic increase in aid to Africa. He says it is the fundamental moral challenge of our time. Blair has a plan to increase aid by billions of dollars through the issuance of bonds, but that idea has already been rejected by President Bush, who says it doesn't match the U.S. budgetary process. Instead, the two will announce an emergency plan to get food to people who are at risk. But there's one other feature of all this aid talk in Washington. We're going to hear a lot more about it over the next month, and we want to focus on it today. It's debt relief. African countries are in the red some $300 billion. Each year, they have to make interest payments on that debt that's close to $15 billion. That's each year. Now, they pay that money to other countries like the U.S., but also to the large international lending agencies like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Many people argue about how aid should be given to African countries, but increasingly, others are saying that debt relief is the way to go. What do you think? Does it make sense to sweep away the debt payments as a way of helping African nations get ahead? Or is that just an invitation to build up more debt? What's the best way to make a difference in Africa? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, we've got a number of guests joining us today, both from the U.S. and from Africa. We're starting with Sally Booker. He is Executive Director of Africa Action, the oldest Africa advocacy organization in the U.S. He's with us from our NPR Washington Bureau. Sally, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you've been making this case for debt relief for years now. Do you think you're actually close to seeing it happen?
Well, we think certainly progress has been made in response to the demand of the debt campaigners throughout Africa and internationally. When the G8 summit occurs next month, that is the summit of the wealthiest countries in the world, we do expect that there will be an agreement on a further step of debt cancellation. It won't be the full story, though. As you mentioned in your lead, Africa owes some $300 billion, primarily to the World Bank and the IMF. And what they're now discussing, that is the leaders of the rich countries, they finally accept that 100% debt cancellation is absolutely necessary, but they're not yet willing to apply that to all the countries that require it. So right now they're really negotiating over 27 of the poorest countries that are indebted, the majority of them in Africa. So we'll still have a campaign to continue even after the summit.
Now, you've been saying, though, that nothing short of 100% debt forgiveness is acceptable. If it's 50% or 75% at the meeting of the G8 in Scotland, isn't that progress?
Oh, it's certainly progress, but they could do so much more. They could actually finally solve this issue. And it's not just a question of, let's say, charity, of how much the rich countries might be willing to give to Africa. It's really a question of justice. In other words, most of these are illegitimate debts. This is more money Africa is paying to service these debts than African governments are spending on education or
healthcare. Sally, what do you mean by illegitimate debts? I mean, it was money that was lent to the countries, some of it years ago, some of it quite recently. Why is it illegitimate?
Almost all of it years ago, made during the Cold War. These were loans that were politically motivated to essentially purchase the support of African dictators at a time of unrepresentative government, often governments that the U.S. helped prop up, like Mobutu Sese Seko in Zaire, now known as Congo. The country owes some $16 billion to these international financial institutions, but that money went to Mobutu's banks, his homes on the Riviera. Why should the citizens in Congo pay back this principal and interest that's continued to be compounded year after year instead of using their scarce resources to build clinics and hospitals and schools? This is what's known as odious debt. In the case of Iraq, the United States is trying to get its creditors to cancel $120 billion because they say those are loans made to the dictator Saddam Hussein. Why should the Iraqi people pay back those debts when they need those resources for domestic priorities and to build democracy? In the case of Africa, the U.S. has been unwilling to acknowledge the historic truth of those arguments as applied to the vast majority of African countries.
All right, Sally, just hang on a second. I want to bring Jeffrey Sachs into the conversation. He is U.N. Special Advisor to Secretary General Kofi Annan on the Millennium Project. That's an initiative to end poverty and hunger by 2015. He's joining us on the line from Bamako in Mali. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us.
A pleasure to be with you.
I understand that you've been meeting with African politicians just in the last few days. How much of a priority is debt relief to them?
Well, they know that this debt is completely unpayable. They know their children are dying, as Sally was just saying. They also know that they're in the surrealistic situation where now, meeting after meeting internationally, the rich countries say, oh, yes, there should be 100% debt cancellation, and then nothing happens. In fact, the real debate now is between the UK and the US about how the balance sheets will be adjusted between the World Bank, the US budget, the UK budget, and other creditor countries. It's not about the point of debt cancellation, and yet, who pays? As the debate goes on, it's the poorest of the poor, and it's the millions of people dying of extreme poverty now because the health systems don't work, because the agriculture systems aren't working and need investment in resources that are being drained away by this vast amount of debt. It's just absolutely shocking. They know it. Everybody knows it, except it seems the White House.
Jeffrey, you're an economist, so help me with how complicated or how simple this has to be. Once you get into the details of debt relief, you have different countries saying, oh, well, the IMF would have to sell off its gold, and then you have gold producers saying, oh, that's a bad idea, and you have a new president, the World Bank, and we're not sure what Wolfowitz is going to do with it. I mean, can you strip away all that and say, you know what, the G7 basically is the IMF. The G said these wealthy countries are the World Bank. Just do it.
The simplest point is start with the goal. The goal is to help the poorest of the poor get out of extreme poverty and get on to a self-sustaining growth where they don't need this kind of help. And analyze what that takes. It takes some basic investments in the health sector and water and sanitation and infrastructure. Then ask, well, given the investments that are needed, can the poorest of the poor pay for those investments and the debt service? The answer is emphatically no. Everybody agrees on that. Well, at that point, you have to ask, what is needed? And again, Tony Blair's Africa Commission, the UN Millennium Project, which I directed, the IMF and the World Bank themselves last month said, we need a doubling of aid and a massive extension of debt cancellation. Everybody that looks at this knows it. It's just that the White House is far more interested in tax cuts for the super rich than it is to address the needs of millions of people who will die by their neglect right now. It's basic arithmetic. There's nothing sophisticated about it. You do the arithmetic, everybody comes to the same conclusion. The White House refuses to do the basic arithmetic.
Can I ask you, Jeffrey, if there is a fair amount of cynicism or suspicion in Africa? This debt relief that we're talking about was a big issue 10 years ago. It was an even bigger issue at the turn of the millennium when people talked about it in Jubilee terms. And here we are 5 years later and we're still talking about it.
Well, I'm starting to date myself as an old man. The fact that I've been talking about this for 20 years, since 1985, this has been going on. It's been obvious. Yeah, of course there's cynicism. There's a doubt that the Western countries ever want to let go of their control over the budgets of these countries. There is a view, which I constantly try to argue against, that the rich just want the poor to die or they want to steal the resources. I don't believe it. I don't believe it's malevolence. I believe it's extreme and reckless neglect is what I do believe. But I also believe that President Bush has a lot of answering to do, because he's given away hundreds of billions of dollars of tax cuts to the super rich. He's increased military spending by hundreds of billions of dollars, but he hasn't found almost a penny for help in Africa. He trumpets, they'll trumpet some more emergency food aid. Africa doesn't want food aid. Africa wants to get out of its food crisis by growing more food. Africa wants to get out of its health crisis by having a reasonable health system. Africa wants to invest in the future, not to receive crumbs of handouts and trickles of relief. They want to get out of the crisis through investment. And that's where we've promised to help, promised to help, promised to help. and haven't helped.
Let me go back to Sally Booker, the executive director of Africa Action, who's in our NPR Washington Bureau. You too, Sally, have been at this for decades. Are you at all cynical? Do you think that you know, we're just going round and round on this, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we could, you know, relieve the debt and we never get around to it?
Well, no, I'm not getting cynical, because I see this as a fundamental problem, if you will, in international relations in the world political economy. In other words, you have a global minority rule, and it's the G7 who are that global minority. These are the richest countries of the world, predominantly white countries. They consume most of the world's resources. They control the institutions of global governance, the bank, the fund, the UN Security Council, the World Trade Organization. And they lay down rules, economic and otherwise, in the interests of their own economies and their own elites, for that matter. Meanwhile, the vast majority of the world, the G6, if you will, the 6 billion people who don't live in those rich countries, are increasingly impoverished. And there's a growing disparity between wealth and poverty in the world, largely because these countries do use things like debt as leverage to dictate their will on the economy. Economies of the rest of the world.
I need to stop you there. We're going to take a short break, and just a chance for me to remind those who are listening along, there are so many ways of talking about delivering foreign aid from wealthy countries to Africa. In this hour, we're trying to focus on debt relief. And is this the year, is this the moment that wealthy countries really should be looking at sweeping away all the debt of the African countries as a way of allowing them that chance to step forward? Does that make a difference? Would that make a difference? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection on the day when British Prime Minister Tony Blair is in Washington, specifically talking about what can and what should be done to increase aid and perhaps relieve the debt of African countries. We're asking you to join that conversation. What do you think would be best for Africa? Is it past time to do away with some $300 billion in debt that the poorest countries in the world are carrying with them? We're at 1-800-423-8255. William Easterly is joining us now. He's a professor of economics at New York University. He also teaches in the Africana Studies program. And William, you also spent, what, some 15 years as an economist senior advisor at the World Bank. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
What you have said in the past and what you've written marks you as something of a skeptic here. Would you say that there's a good reason not to forgive the debt of these African countries?
Well, I totally agree with the other speakers about the critical needs of poor Africans for basic health care and education and good roads and all the things they desperately need. If there's anything George Bush and Tony Blair can do, and I think there are some things, then more power to them. But the idea that just more Western money is the answer is very simplistic, and history tells us is just plain wrong. There's already been $568 billion in foreign aid to Africa over the past 43 years, and it's left Africa in stagnation.
Would you say, Bill, that forgiving the debt would be tantamount to another $300 billion in aid?
I think it's just another way to package giving more money to Africa, and I don't think money is the problem. In fact, the debt itself shows how ineffective aid has been. You have to remember that the World Bank loans were made at a zero interest rate with a 10-year grace period, that is 10 years in which you didn't have to repay at all, and then a 40-year maturity after that in which you had 40 years to pay back the debt.
So if it's not aid or if it's not debt relief, then what's your proposal?
I think we would make a lot more progress if we stopped obsessing about the amount of Western money going to Africa, which I don't think is the problem, and instead held the aid agencies accountable for getting specific results on the ground. You know, the Gordon Brown in the UK, Tony Blair's Chancellor of the Exchequer, talks about how more aid could get 12-cent medicines to prevent children from dying from malaria. Well, you know, what I wonder is why hasn't hundreds of billions of dollars of aid already gotten 12-cent medicines to children dying from malaria? That shows something is badly wrong with the aid system, and you need to fix it so that the aid system gets results, gets 12-cent medicines to children.
Do you fix it by saying less aid, less money?
I don't think less or more money is the direction that you should be focusing on. I think you should be focusing on trying to get the aid agencies, the World Bank and the IMF and the USAID and all the other aid agencies, much more accountable for getting results on the ground. And once we have more confidence that the aid dollars are actually reaching poor people, then I think you will see a lot more support all across the board for more foreign aid, and then definitely you should increase aid and forgive debt.
Jeffrey Sachs, in your book, The End of Poverty, you're saying that precisely what is needed now is a sort of massive inflow of foreign aid to sort of crush the kind of distinctions that exist between the rich and poor for once and for all. What do you say to Bill?
Well, I don't quite know. Let me be clear. What I said is that there are millions of people dying of extreme poverty right now, and they are not on a track of development because they're dying. They're hungry. They lack infrastructure. They lack the most basic things. I'm not a leveler or an equalizer. I said that people are dying by the millions. We're not helping them even to stay alive, much less to get on a path of development. And what Bill Easterly said, that's mumbo-jumbo, because, of course, there should be accountability on the ground. But then he said, then we would support more aid. Well, Bill, let me give it to you right now.
I think we have lost that connection to Africa. Bill, I'm going to have you jump in here on the claim that it's mumbo-jumbo that you're saying.
Well, let me give my good friend Jeffrey some more mumbo-jumbo. I completely agree with the tragedy of millions of people dying in Africa unnecessarily, children dying from easily preventable diseases. I would support anything. I would do anything to change that. I don't see putting the focus on more money as a constructive step to change that, because we already have been pouring in more money and still the children are dying. I'd like to see change that instead says, let's hold agencies accountable for actually getting the medicines to the children and actually stopping them from dying. That hasn't been happening. Let's make it happen.
Jeffrey, are you there?
I am here.
I'd like to hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear now. I'd just like you to...
I cannot believe what we're hearing, because it is so much nonsense. The amount of money going in for malaria control right now is about $200 million a year total. It is not enough, given that the medicines are a dollar a treatment right now for first-line medicines that work, and given that you need $7 bed nets to cover about 300 million children, not even counting the transport costs coming here. This is tiny amounts of money for us, a few bucks per person in the rich world, but a multiple of what's going right now. So Bill Easterly says, use it effectively. Bill, do the arithmetic just for once. Just for once, do the arithmetic. It's not enough money. And that's the basic point. And that's why people are dying by the millions. Where were you when there was no AIDS treatment? Were you campaigning for AIDS treatment? Now there are hundreds of thousands under treatment, thanks to us, not you, as far as I remember. But it's still not enough money. So this is basic arithmetic, nothing more than that.
Let me just hear from Sally Booker in Washington on this point. There is a phrase that is often used, Sally, when people talk about aid to Africa. It's money down a rat hole. Bill Easterly is not saying that, but that there is a consensus that, why put more money in if you can't account for what's there? Are we ever going to get past that political answer?
Well, I think people have to understand why they can't account for past aid, because that was money given intentionally to Cold War allies in Africa. In other words, the objectives of all these loans of the past that have enslaved Africa in the chains of debt were not development. They were purchasing the political solidarity or support of African governments. So this issue of accountability, the question is who's holding accountable the wealthy countries for their their use of their power in dictating the economic conditions. Now, in Africa, what citizens are asking of their governments, they demand, they say, we don't owe, we shouldn't pay. And more importantly, they ask, who owes whom? Is it really the poorest countries in the world, in the region of Africa, that owe the wealthiest minority of countries and the international financial institutions after 500 years of enslavement, the transatlantic slave trade, colonialism, neocolonialism, and finally only, if you will, real independence in the 90s after the end of the Cold War? Or is it the wealthy countries that owe the poor countries, that amass these wealthy countries that amass their wealth at the expense of the impoverishment and underdevelopment of Africa and much of the rest of the global south?
Jeff Sachs, just a last one for you. When you are on the ground in Africa and when you're talking to the politicians, are they saying that we're at some kind of a turning point, or is that turning point that we talk about something that is being driven in large part by Western countries here?
Well, they're hoping, hope against hope, that we're at a turning point, but they know the truth. And I'd like to be clear about this so-called money down the drain issue, which is the biggest myth that Mr. Easterly and people like him continue to propound. If you look at U.S. aid right now to Africa, U.S. aid, it will be about $3 billion this year for all of Africa. Of that $3 billion, about $1 billion is emergency food aid, of which, incidentally, half of that, $500 million, is shipping costs on U.S. vessels. Of the $2 billion that remains, more than $1 billion is for consultants' fees. What we're actually providing to Africa, actually, to invest in clinics and schools and medicines, is a few hundred million dollars, less than a dollar per African, most likely. And the result is that it's not money down the drain, it's money that never arrives. This is the big lie of American public discussion right now. The feeling that we do oh so much and you don't see the results, well, we've done oh so little. And it's all a matter of arithmetic. And as soon as Mr. Easterly starts some basic arithmetic, then the facts can come out. But they haven't come out yet because he's operating with mythology, not with reality.
Jeffrey Sachs, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
Jeffrey is UN Special Advisor to Secretary General Kofi Annan on the Millennium Project and author of a book, The End of Poverty. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take a call from Natick, Massachusetts, and Sam is joining us. Hello, Sam.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for letting me in. But or otherwise, I'm from Africa. Both sides of the argument are all correct. Now, as a physician, we have diagnosis and we have treatment. Well, now we have the diagnosis. What is the treatment? The treatment is not more borrowing and more AIDS. And the treatment is not doing anything. The fact is that I want both sides of this argument to tell me how much of the oil money, say from Nigeria, from Kuwait, from Saudi Arabia, from gold, from Liberia, At one point, I understand that someone paid Charles Taylor, $10 million to buy the gold diamond mine, something like that. The point is that how much of this money that are being owed are dumped here in United States, Citigroup, Barclays Bank International?
Sam, can I ask you, I want to try and keep this simple so people can follow us here. Are you saying that for a country like Nigeria, for example, Nigeria should get no help from the West because it has its oil and it can deal with its debt if it only does, sort of manages its affairs properly?
Well, that's true, but that's not the exact argument. The argument is that we know where that money is. Well, if only, we in the United States can enforce the law right now, return the money, we know where the money is. Everybody knows where it is. Britain knows where the money is. Barclays Bank International, how many dictators, past and the present, have billions in there?
Sam, just stay on the line with me for half a second. I want to bring Sally back in here because, Sally, this is the point that has a lot of people very edgy about sending more money to Africa, as it ends up in the Swiss bank accounts of dictators.
Well, but then that relies on a sort of ignorance of recent history in Africa, and it appeals to, unfortunately, you know, we have to address the issue of racism in American thought when people think of Africa, when they think of the problems and when they think of the nature of the governments. This problem of accountability is not just for aid agencies of the World Bank and the IMF, but also the corporations that are pumping that oil in Nigeria, like Chevron, Shell, like Halliburton, the company that Dick Cheney used to lead. These are the financiers of the corruption in Africa. It takes two sides to be corrupt. You know, you can't be corrupt by yourself. And it's certainly not poor African countries that are corrupting these big multinational corporations, but rather the reverse. But when we talk about debt cancellation, and that's an important focus for our discussion today, it is part of an answer to the question of how do you finance development in Africa. It is debt cancellation. It is also increases in development assistance. It is attracting foreign direct investment to Africa. And it is also the question of increasing trade. But you have to begin with debt cancellation because that is the thing that could open up and free the greatest amount of resources that African governments are currently sending out of their country. Keep that money at home so that they can spend on their own citizens' education, healthcare, and economic development. And it's the principal obligation of those citizens to hold their governments accountable for the use of those resources. And that is what the growing democratic movements in Africa have been demanding. But these governments, if they're more accountable to the World Bank and the IMF and the rich country creditors, they're less accountable to their own citizenry. In Nigeria, you have the lower house of parliament that has passed legislation saying the government must repudiate this debt, that it does not owe it, that those were loans made to military dictatorships, and that the citizens of Nigeria demand that that money be spent at home.
Let me just stop you here, Sally. I want to make sure that I'm following properly, and I'm Bill Easterly. I want to turn to you on this. Just if we take the simple point that by breaking the relationship between the World Bank and the IMF in these African countries, if, as Sally suggests, you say, okay, cancel the debt, so the money that is now being paid to service that debt can be spent in countries like Malawi and Zambia and places like that, then is it reasonable, as Sally suggests, that the people can then hold their own political leaders accountable for how that money is spent?
Well, I think there is hope there, and there is progress being made there, but let me respond to a couple of the things that have come up here that I think are creating their own mythology. Jeff Sachs talks about how much U.S. aid is tied and flows back to the U.S. That is, U.S. is extreme there, and in fact, some aid that is not tied at all is World Bank multilateral aid, and yet studies show that World Bank aid is no more effective than any other type of aid at promoting growth in Africa. So, Jeffrey, I really have done the arithmetic. The typical African country gets 17% of its GDP, of its income, in foreign aid inflows, and yet this aid inflow is still not creating growth, still not creating any payoff. And I have to ask, you know, why is there, year after year, I've been working in this business for 20 years and have been reading the literature that goes back 50 years, and there have been people like Jeffrey Sachs ever since the 1950s calling for ever more money to go to Africa, ever more Western money. And yet we never get around to fixing the aid system to make sure that these dollars actually reach the poor people that need the essential medicines to save their lives.
But it's not for you to fix. It's for them to fix. In other words,
I agree with you.
That is the problem. Why are you trying to dictate to African countries how they spend their money? That's why World Bank aid and IMF aid has been ineffective, because it is not given without strings, and those strings dictate what African governments must do, privatizing their utilities, water, charging fees for health care and education that the government used to provide, more deeply impoverishing the most poor of these countries. So the World Bank and the IMF can't say, and the Western countries that control those institutions can't say that, well, aid is ineffective. If we could show it was effective, we would give more. And then you fail to address the issue essentially of reparations.
I need to stop.
Don't
right
the wealthy
there.
Countries
Hang on a
second, owe
Sally.
Africa?
We're out of time. We have to take a short break. We are going to continue this when we come back, and we'll hear from both of you. We're also going to include our listeners in this conversation. Who is responsible for fixing the problems here? Are these decisions that need to be made at the offices of the IMF and the World Bank? And if, in fact, they need to be made in the African capitals, what's the best way of doing that? Is it by canceling debt or not? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. This hour, we're talking about debt relief for Africa. My guests include Sally Booker. He is Executive Director of Africa Action. And Bill Easterly, Professor of Economics at NYU and 16 years as an economist and senior advisor at the World Bank. The number for you to join us, 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Pinehurst, North Carolina. James is on the line. Hello, James. What do you think? James,
Very
are you?
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Okay, what do you think should be done? What's your perspective here?
Well, I've actually had the opportunity to work in Africa, and what I have seen and what has been reflected in a book written by a gentleman by the name of Paul Thoreau is that these just decades and decades of giving have created a culture of asking and an expectation that they will receive. It's a dependency on donations, and I'll give one vignette, I guess, to kind of substantiate this. I was operating in Mandera, Kenya, up in the northeast section of Kenya, and was at a hospital trying to figure out, you know, what can we do to help your hospital operate better, and one of the chief things they were asking for was ambulances. As we took a tour of the hospital grounds, I went behind the hospital, and there sat three Land Rovers that had been donated at some point in time in the past to be ambulances, all of them sitting up on blocks in various states of disrepair. Clearly what they needed was not a new ambulance. What they needed was training how to sustain and maintain those things that had already been given to them. And I've seen that all over East Africa as well as the vast majority of Sub-Saharan Africa. That's the vignette. The one question that I would have, and I'd be interested to hear your guest's response on, is the promotion of this internal accountability. I know we touched on that just a few minutes ago. But in Kenya, they have what appears to be a very robust anti-corruption campaign for the government workers and for citizens. If you're aware of corruption, you report it. The government is allegedly going to follow up on it. And I think that's really going to be the key throughout Africa to get a handle on this, is to get this corruption under control and accounted for by the citizens of the individual countries.
Okay, James, I'm going to take your point about bringing the corruption down and the accountability up and bring Abraham McLaughlin in. He is a correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor, joining us now on the line from Johannesburg in South Africa. Abe, it's good of you to be with us. Are you there?
Thanks, yep.
Yeah, when you listen to James describe this sort of scene of dependency, almost like an addiction to aid. Is that a reasonable image? Is that what you see in your work as a reporter?
Yes, to a certain extent. I mean, you look at African governments. I mean, most of the countries that I go to, they'll get half or more of their budgets each year from Western donors. So there is a great dependency. I mean, the reasons that it got going are very complicated and have to do with colonialism and the colonial powers taking so much wealth out of the countries and that kind of thing. But yes, there is now a kind of dependency in many countries.
And if there are leaders in those countries that recognize there is a certain addiction to this aid, what's the methadone? What's the way of breaking that dependency?
Well, I mean, the debt relief that we're talking about could certainly help. Being able to spend a lot less each year on servicing their debt and a lot more on schools so that they can educate people. I mean, one of the things, I'm in South Africa, and it's not exactly colonialism, but the white government here did not allow blacks to be educated beyond a certain level, and so they were just not getting the education they needed to run the governments well, run the countries, the companies well, and that's similar in other places in Africa. And so, to be able to fund universal primary education, so that every kid gets to go to school, that would be a pretty incredible step up.
Let me ask. Sorry, Abe, let me, if I can, ask you, when you talk to people there, and I asked this earlier of Jeff Sachs and Sally Booker, is there any belief that this kind of debt cancellation is ever going to happen, or are people saying, oh, we've been hearing about this for years and nothing's come through?
There's a lot of skepticism when Western politicians start talking about that they're going to help Africa. And that, I think, comes from some ripples of colonialism, and also feeling like it often has a lot to do with politics in the Western countries, and not so much to do with helping Africa. So there is a lot of skepticism, but at the same time, they know that, I mean, you know, getting rid of this billions that African governments are paying every year in debt service, that would make a difference. So a little hope, a lot of skepticism.
Abe, thanks for being with us. That's Abraham McLaughlin. He's Christian Science Monitor correspondent in Johannesburg, South Africa. We're going to a call in Belmont, Massachusetts. David's joining us on the line. Hi, David.
Hi there. I was just curious, if this debt relief does happen, the slate gets wiped clean, will the World Bank ever lend any of these countries money ever again? Or will they have a bad credit rating?
No, it's a great question. Sally Booker, could that be a condition of debt relief? You know, we're clearing the books, but don't come knocking.
Well, that certainly shouldn't be, nor is it being considered. And certainly the World Bank and the IMF as the two key international financial institutions, if they're going to continue to exist, increasingly need to focus on providing grant assistance and not debt financing, so that you avoid future problems of indebtedness. But again, all of this fails to address the issue of the illegitimacy of these debts. Why should these African governments pay back these debts? Most of the aid that people were referring to and going to African government budgets every year, how much of that money is actually going back out of the country to pay off the interest on these debts?
But hang on a second, Sally.
There's more money going out of Africa than coming into
Africa. I understand
Africa.
That, but you might get a Democratic president elected in the United States. That president doesn't come in and say, you know, all those debts rung up by the Republicans who were there before me, I shouldn't be responsible for them. I mean, at some level, a country is responsible for whatever its historical obligations are, no?
When it achieves liberation, when it has governments that actually represent the interests of the people, as opposed to, you take Zaire as the example.
Right.
They elected their first president. The CIA and the opposition there assassinated Patrice Lumumba. They installed Mobutu Sese Seko. The U.S., the World Bank, the IMF, the French, the Belgians, they start spending their money on Mobutu. Now, you know, three decades later, he's gone. The citizens of that country owe $16 billion. Why should they pay that money back?
Bill Easterly, do you think that the debts are illegitimate? Would you agree with Sally on this?
Well, certainly I agree with him on Mobutu. It was ridiculous that anyone ever lent money to Mobutu or supported him. But that is not the typical case, unfortunately. There's not such a clean break in many other African countries. It's a myth that most of this debt was accumulated by, you know, kind of tin pot Cold War dictators. A lot of money has flown in, has gone into Africa from the West. And, you know, going back to Sally Booker's point about internal accountability, that's something I couldn't agree with more. You know, I think the problem with Tony Blair's plan and Jeffrey Sachs's plan is it sort of brings back the image that it's up to the West to save Africa. And frankly, I find that very patronizing and offensive. I think it's up to Africans to save Africa.
Can I ask you just one quick question, Bill? It takes us back to the question David asked. If debt relief was something that was genuinely being considered, would you think it a good idea if the condition of wiping the debt was that the country's not come back either for more loans or for more grants?
Under those circumstances, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Let's go to our callers. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Misra's joining us on the line from there. Hi, Misra.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Okay, now, we're not talking about, it's good to have this debt, deleted, whatever, but then we need to attach something to this government in Africa who's making Africa poor, because we always talk about Africa being poor. They are not poor. One example, in Ethiopia. Now, do you know that no one owned the land. It's the government. That's the country where the human race started. That's where the birthplace of coffee. We should be flooded with tourism and make a lot of money. There's a lot of things there, but ineffective and undemocratic government is there, and no one is talking about that, including United States.
So should the World Bank then, Misra, say to the government in Ethiopia, you know what, sell that land off, let the farmers run their own farms, and then we'll think about helping you out?
Something like that. They need to change their policy. It's not market economy. They're saying it is market economy only to their own benefit, to the government who own a corporation, who's ripping off the people.
I have to ask you one more question, Misra, though, and that is, you know, whenever it is that the IMF or the World Bank places conditions on countries like this, oh, you've got to privatize your bus company, you've got to, you know, sell this off, you can't be a national corporation. The people in those African countries really complain about that. They say they don't like the conditions that are being attached.
Yeah, but the media is not, I mean, no one is helping the people, though. We're talking about some different issue. That's why these countries are poor. They are not poor. They have resource. We have this ineffective government. They are very selfish. They don't know what they are doing. So we need to do something about that.
Bill Easterly, I know that this is a part of your thesis, but I don't know how you get money into the hands of, you know, ordinary people to make these changes, how you bypass the government. How do you do that?
It's not easy, but I think the aid agencies have to start experimenting with doing that. And actually, to some extent, they already are. They're already directing aid through NGOs, bypassing the government. In fact, the governments are the sort of governments that want to control the money for their own political ends are complaining about how much the aid agencies are bypassing them. But actually, I think they should be the autocratic, self-interested governments should be bypassed even more than they are now.
Sally, what do you think about that?
Again, you know, the problem is who ultimately is going to take responsibility. I mean, I finally agreed with Bill on a previous point where he said the West is not going to save Africa. It's for Africans to find their own solutions. And so for the West to then try to bypass governments, to finance NGOs, why, you know, would these governments not believe that the U.S. and the Western countries have a political agenda there? They're financing opposition groups, or they're financing activities designed to undermine, essentially, the democratic demands of people in these countries.
The point is that they're really no different from this country in that everything is at least in part political.
Well, that's right. But the critical thing here, again, is, you know, the question of wherein lies the real obligation and responsibility for real conditions on the ground. And then also, I think all of us have been exaggerating to some degree how much assistance goes to Africa. I mean, the United States provides the little country of Israel three times the annual assistance that it provides all 48 of sub-Saharan African countries. The issue here is how low a priority Africa is for the U.S. and for the wealthy nations of the G7 countries. If the conditions that exist in Africa, whether it's the HIV/AIDS pandemic or civil conflicts in certain countries, if that were taking place in Europe, the response would be completely different. So this is a historic problem with the United States. The U.S. is itself a country of African descent as much as it is a country of European descent, but it's always denied that historic connection. It has never compensated the unpaid labor that helped amass the wealth and capital in this country. And it's essentially sort of demonized the African continent, in large part supported by the ignorance Americans have of Africa.
Let me go to Bill Easterly on one thing that is on the table whenever Washington talks about aid to Africa. That's the, I think I'm calling it the Millennium Challenge account. I may have the name slightly wrong, but this is the plan announced by the Bush administration that they will give aid to governments that show they are embracing certain basic tenets of democracy. Some people say that's a great idea. Other people are saying, you know, a half dozen countries in Africa meet that test right now, and so it's too strict, it's too stingy. Is that a way to go?
Well, going back to Sally Booker's point about Western interference in Africa, it's even more interfering to somehow try to figure out from the outside which governments are supposedly deserving of assistance, and then propping up those governments that the West has decided are deserving with lots of aid. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that shows that aid.
You don't think that if the U.S., you know, cut a deal like that, watched a democratic election take place in Zambia, and then in effect used the aid as a kind of reward towards that shift to democracy, that the neighboring countries, the people in Zimbabwe and Uganda and others, wouldn't see that and say, hey, maybe that's where we need to go?
We've already been trying that for the past 10 or 15 years, and it doesn't seem to have much incentive effect like that. You know, it's far more interfering to always try to control the government or judge what the government should be than it would be to just bypass the government and get aid to individuals.
I'm going to get in another caller before the end of the program. Billy's joining us on the line from Boston. Hi, Billy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. Yeah, I don't have a solution to this particular problem, but when you look at all the major problems in the world, really all it requires is good leadership, especially in the Western world, especially in the United States. And we don't have that. We have far too many politicians and not enough statesmen. And what we really need is not a war on terror, but a war on tyranny. And not just freedom from tyranny is not just freedom from tyrants, as President Bush asserts, but it's freedom from bad education and illiteracy and famine and disease and civil war and all these things that plague Africa.
Billy, now Bill Easterly just made the point a couple of minutes ago that it's almost impossible to sit in Washington and judge the quality of all the different governments in Africa. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I would agree that it's impossible to do that, but like I say, I think that the first step is just good leadership. I think it's not a matter of ability. We are the United States of America, and despite a deficit and all these problems we're having, we can do really anything we want. And the fact that we are just spending 0.15% of our GDP on foreign aid, whereas the Millennium Challenge account asks for 0.7% of 1%, I think just goes to show how little leadership and how little will there is to solve these problems.
You're saying unless the United States, or until the United States, in fact, raises the amount of money it's willing to give, that it doesn't have a lot of weight here.
Yes, and the money is a symbol of the will.
Billy, I thank you for your call and a chance for me to thank the guests who've been with me on the program. Sally Booker, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Sally Booker is Executive Director of Africa Action, and Bill Easterly, thank you as well.
Pleasure to be here.
Bill is a professor of economics at New York University and a former economist at the World Bank. And earlier in the program, we heard from Jeffrey Sachs, director of Columbia University's Earth Institute. He was in Bamako, Mali, and Abe McLaughlin, Christian Science Monitor correspondent, spoke to us from Johannesburg in South Africa. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.